Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 310. Thank you all for tuning in. Thanks for all the love for all the episodes so far this year. The Robert Eggers one last week went down a treat. I got a lot of messages from a lot of you who went to see The Lighthouse in the cinema off the back of that podcast and off the back of the Films of the Year podcast, which, if you didn't catch the Films of the Year podcast at the start of the year, it's last year's Films of the Year. It's worth a look now because a lot of them are now up on Netflix or Sky or wherever else. So, give them a look. But this week's episode is an Ask Pip episode. I haven't done one of these. I reckon it's in about 2 years, you know. I think the last one I did was the one where I ended up crying in my living room on my own. So there's that. Hope you all enjoy this. I won't ramble on too long as I get through a lot of questions. So hopefully you'll enjoy it and there'll be some new information there. A bit of new information that some of you might not know is I've got two podcasts. You know, a lot of you listen to Distraction Pieces, but I'm also one of the hosts on the Pod Bible podcast. And it's only a 20 to 30 minute podcast that comes out every week on Mondays. And we talk to podcasters about their podcast and about their favourite podcasts. So it's well worth a look. We've had people like, James Acaster and Ed Gamble. We've had all of the Gossip Mongers lot. We've had Russell Tovey. We've had Carrie Ad Lloyd. We've had Kate Thornton. We've had the No Such Thing as a Fish guys, the Football Ramble guys. Loads of really good people. Give it a listen, the Pod Bible podcast. As said, the point of it being only a 20 to 30 minute thing is that you can kind of add it to your regular listening rather than have it replace any podcast. Although if you are short of podcasts, obviously there'll be probably some recommendations there. And we've done a load of episodes, so you could just download the whole lot and binge them quite comfortably. They're evergreen. They're not time sensitive. So, go and have a look. It's worth a look, the Pod Bible podcast, because Pod Bible, of course, is the podcast magazine that I do. I talk about it a bit in the episode, so I won't ramble on too much now. Speechdevelopmentrecords.com is obviously my web store. January is always a bit of a slow one over there. So now we're in February and you've all been paid. Feel free to go and share the love over at speechdevelopmentrecords.com. And patreon.com/scroobiouspip if you want to just donate £1 a month, if you feel they're worth £1 a month. There's not a lot going on over there at the moment, I'm not going to lie. But it's the point of it is that I don't do tiers. If you pay £10, I'll do a dance for you. The point is, if you can spare a quid, that works out at like 25p an episode or 20p an episode. In fact, it's a dollar, so it works out about 15p an episode, if that. If you can spare a quid, then the idea is you sign up and then you just forget about it. You leave it there. I do some stuff over there every now and then, but it's not, you know, recently I've been filming on a few bits, so it's not something that takes priority, but that's why I don't, you know, do higher tiers and stuff like that. Anyway, I was going to keep this brief. Let's get on with the podcast. This is episode 310 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, and it's with you guys. It's the questions that you guys submitted on my Facebook. This is Ask Pip. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. Right, hello guys. I'm a little bit. this is already too much information, as the Ask Pips often can be. But I'm recording this post workout, so I'm a little bit breathy. If you find that incredibly sexy, I'm going to answer a load of questions. Thank you so much for the absolute outpouring of questions. There was loads. I had over 130 or 40, maybe over 150. I've gone through and marked the ones I thought were the best and deleted the ones I didn't like. Or not that I didn't like, or ones I've answered before I didn't fancy. And I'm going to answer them. Not sure how long it will take. Again, I might get, some might be short answers, some might be long answers. Off the bat, I had a few people ask this and I'm not answering it, so asked this in a variation of ways, and it's something that gets asked all the time, and I answer all the time. So all of you who are regular listeners will know what I'm about to say. But I have no current plans to do any new music. I couldn't be happier with my back catalogue. I'm incredibly proud of it. And I've got nothing I wish to add to that at the moment. If I do ever return, I think it'd be for a third solo record. I feel there's still some space there. Me and Dan Lesak set out to do three records. We didn't particularly expect to get to do three, and we certainly didn't expect to have our third record as the one that we're both, I think, most proud of. Songs like Stunner and You Will See Me and Gold Teeth and Terminal are some of our favourite, proudest bits of work. And yeah, I'm really proud of that. So I've no plans to return to that at all. A lot of people asked if I'll write any spoken word. Honestly, I've never seen a difference between that. If I'm writing, I'm writing. Pretty much all of my spoken word pieces were normally, or vice versa, either were originally songs with Dan or solo, or became songs with Dan or solo. So there's not a difference there for me. It's just a case of how it's performed, which gets to performing live. I've no desire to perform live anytime either. Again, if I do ever perform live again, I think it would be to tour new music. The thing that I've realised over the years is that I was never about the kind of the adoration of a crowd. The excitement for me was to share new stuff that I've written. That was the excitement. I don't think I have... I was going to say the ego, the type of ego that kind of gets high off of that screaming crowd adoration. It's obviously lovely and amazing, but I'm a bit of a solitude guy. I'm equally happy at home on my own as I am standing in a room of a few thousand people screaming my lovely praise, which is wonderful, as said, but it's, yeah, I've not missed it. I've honestly not missed it. And yeah, it was going to the gigs of Sage and Dolan and POS on their UK tours and knowing that these are guys I've got songs with. So if I jumped up and did a song, I'd get that hit of feel good, people telling me I'm great kind of thing. And I could do that and then go home. And I had no desire to do that. I was far more excited to watch these people that I adore do their thing. Yeah, and that really made me realise that it was never about the jumping in front of the crowd and getting the love. It was about the excitement of having written something that I'm insanely proud of. And we'll get to bits of that later, I think, but that's kind of where I am now. I'm working on loads of different scripts, which I'm insanely excited about. Every time I record a good podcast, I'm insanely excited to get it out there. And the biggest thing is every time I get a new acting gig, I'm just so excited to get there, to be there, to be part of it. It's such a buzz. Yeah. So yeah, no plans to play live ever again. As I've said numerous times, my last ever gig was mine and Dan's farewell gig at Bestival with 10,000 people in the crowd, all knowing every word, all singing along, knowing it was our last gig, introduced by Rob DeBank, who was the guy who signed us and put out our records. My family were there. A lot of my friends were there. Why would I want to remove that from the pillar of being my last gig? You know, that's a hard one to top, to get to choose when you go out and to get to go out on top. You know, our biggest festival season that we'd ever had, our biggest album commercially and critically, I think. You can't fuck with that, man. I'm lucky to have got to choose that. And again, a lot of people are sad because they never got to see me or us live. But number one, Dan Lesak has made some of the best music of his career in the last couple of years. He's been putting out some absolutely amazing stuff. So that's worth going and listening to. And number two, I did do over 1,000 gigs in the UK, Ireland, France, Germany, Italy, Holland, Belgium, America, Canada, Japan. Yeah, just all over Europe, all over, you know, America, all of these places. So, you know,
I don't feel I owe anyone anything. I don't mean that to sound rude, but I feel I did a lot of gigs and I loved every one of them, but there was a lot of opportunities and I can't control, particularly with being an independent artist and not having huge budgets to promote. I can't control when people find or found our stuff, you know. It's always had to be organic. And it's just unfortunate that there's a fair few people who found it after it was over as such. But yeah, I thought I'd answer that quickly now. So let's get on to the questions. Oh, I've had a few new ones have come in since I deleted and left only the ones I wanted. The first at the top here, Maddie Lesage, friend of mine. Not really a question, but please do more wrestling-related podcasts for me. Thanks. I kind of stopped having wrestling guests on because of Tuesday Night Jaw. Tuesday Night Jaw is amazing. I'm also, it's not on the network, but I'm a big fan of Hardest Part of the Ring. So there's two really good wrestling podcasts out there that I think cover those things. It's worth mentioning that Maddie is a wrestler herself. Does she wrestle under Maddie Almighty? I'm not sure. Either Maddie Almighty or Maddie Lesage. So if you are a wrestling fan, look her up and check out her shit. She's dope. She was also in the video for Stunner and a little advert thing I did on YouTube for the Caps, I think. She might have been in another one, her and her sister. So there we go. No plans to do any wrestling ones. But again, every now and then I break it. I broke it for Eddie Dennis. I broke it for Jack Sexsmith. You know, every time it changes. Right, Lee Condon. I've not read this one, so yeah. Not sure how to write this, but hopefully you get the gist. If you were to ask your fans, followers, friends, family, would we rather have no new podcasts for the next 3 years so you could work on a new album and tour it, or continue with regular podcasts but no album will be made? What do you think we'd all choose? The answer to that is irrelevant. I don't mean to sound blunt, but I've no desire to make new music. So if I did no new podcasts for the next 3 years, there still wouldn't be a new album. The new music isn't because of the podcast or because of the acting even. The acting and the podcasts are because I've no desire to make any new music. And let's see, I've been thinking about this myself and I'd struggle to answer. I'd love a new album, but can we get through without any new podcasts for that long? It would make for an interesting poll, I reckon. Yeah, again, I appreciate that. But again, it's not about that. I've no desire to make any new music. Or more importantly, I have no new music to make. It's not like I'm sitting on all this amazing stuff that I'm holding off or haven't got time to write. I mean, as you can see from my Films of the Year podcast, I watch on average 100 films in the cinema each year. I could not do that and get an album done time-wise. But I've got nothing to add. I'm happy with... I had someone messaging me the other day saying, surely at a time like this, politically, we need voices like yours more than ever. And it's like, well, no, I don't think so. I think there's tons of amazing voices out there. And equally, Stake a Claim remains valid. Stiff Upper Lip remains valid. Great Britain remains valid. I've got nothing particular to add to that, particularly in song form. I've said my stuff. Get Better in many ways remains valid. There's a lot of things in my songs that I'm kind of feel like they're broad strokes now. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that is still there. I've just got nothing to add to it at this stage. So yeah, but that's a cool question. I like that it was kind of nice about it at the end. It is one of those things, and this is something I've not talked about. I'm so proud of what me and Dan Lesak did with our careers. And I love looking over the photos of our live gigs and even just the photos of us together. In fact, yeah, I'm going to go on a longer one here before I even get to any more questions. I love looking at that shit. And I would post stuff like that a lot more on social media, but I don't. I stop myself because I know that if I post that, all of the replies are going to be, are you two going to do any music again? Are you two going to get back together? Are you two going to tour? And we're not going to. And that is, it's mildly frustrating for me, but I know for a fact it's really frustrating for Dan Lesak because he's still producing amazing music. So, and he has the struggles that we always had, but magnified, of getting people to listen to your new music as an independent artist. As I've said, there's
tons of people I hear from who didn't hear about our stuff until we'd stopped. And we toured for 10 years and we toured really hard. So, you know, imagine how annoying it is if you're that Dan Lesac and you've been away in the lab for a week working on this amazing music and you come online and that guy you used to work with has tagged you in a photo and all the responses are, when are you going to do stuff together again? And you're sitting there like, well, number one, we're not. And number two, I'm still doing loads of awesome stuff. So maybe listen to that instead. And another thing, I had someone message the other day saying, did you and Dan have a falling out? Yo, I feel closer to Dan than I've ever felt at the moment. I love that man with a passion. We see each other far, far less. I feel like I hear from him loads because I listen to his podcast, Falling Forward, and I adore it. And I love hearing where Dan is in his life and who he is, because there's been a lot of changes over the years. And, you know, we never had a falling out, but 100% there was points where things were fracturous, because it's really hard. You watch any touring band talk, there's points when it's really hard because you're together all the time. You're thrown into this thing as a group. There's this person that you're seeing more than any member of your family or any of your friends. And they're not a member of your family. And hopefully they're your friend. But at times they're probably not your friend either in those situations. And that goes both ways, you know. I know that, I don't know, I've got a weird... people who get to know me a bit better get to know I've got a surprisingly low self-esteem. And not in a depressing way. I'm fine with it. But my assumption tends to be that, you know, people... I do people's heads in a bit, or I'm a bit much, or because I'm very focused and driven and very excited about the things I'm excited about. I'm very non-engaging on the things I'm non-engaging on. I'm not the most social of people. So my default in my head is, I probably do everyone's heads in. Every now and then it'll be a cool night out and it'll be fine. But in general, that's my default. And I'm getting to learn over the years that that's not really the case. There's a lot of people who, yeah, I don't do the heads in. This has gone weird. But the point of that I'm saying is I wouldn't have been the easiest person to tour with. I'm not talkative. On tour, I will spend a lot. Whenever we had a new person join the tour, I'd find a moment to say to them, look, I'm all right. Like, if I'm getting in the van and sitting there in silence, there's nothing wrong. I'm just not that guy. If we're going to be in a van together every day for several months, I'm not going to have those everyday needs to fill the silence. You know, I will happily just sit there. I'll put my headphones on, or I'll read. Or at that point, I was playing a lot of Championship Manager. I'll go into my own space because I am quite a solitary person. Since I've stopped touring, I'll regularly go several days without seeing anyone, and I won't be depressed or miserable. I'll be happy as anything. It's just, yeah, that's kind of my default. But yeah, so the main takeaway of this is I fucking love Dan Lesac. I've no desire to make any music with him or anyone, but you should all go and listen to his music. And I've no desire to step on stage again. I love where I found myself in this creative process that doesn't involve having to be in front of a crowd. Even though I said I love all of those years of touring, the reason I wanted to stop when I did was that I'd loved every gig. And I was fearful that it was about to get to that point where I kind of stopped loving them and it kind of became a chore. God, we're a quarter of an hour in and I've literally answered no questions. But Ben Fordham, have you ever thought about doing some SDR, that's Speech Development Records, underwear? Also, do you know what your next merch will be? Many thanks, Pip. I looked into it once and genuinely my big thing with merch is wanting to make stuff that's cool as fuck, but not going to be insanely expensive, and finding that balance. The gloves are a perfect example of that. The gloves are the best thing I've ever made, the best bit of merch I've ever made. I couldn't be prouder of them, but they cost a lot to make. Therefore, they have to be quite expensive. I think they're like 30 quid or something, which for a pair of gloves, it's a lot, man. But they're really good quality and they're really good. And I wanted to make sure they were faux leather, so they weren't vegan, and they had all the different fabrics, so they were vegan, all the different fabrics and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, if you're doing t-shirts, It's really cheap and easy because every band is doing that. If you're doing gloves, if you're doing swimsuits, if you're doing all the weird shit that I do, then my poor merch people have to find a manufacturer, we have to find a style, we have to find all of these things to have them actually made, rather than you buy a load of cheap black Gildan t-shirts and print on them. So yeah, that's kind of the tough thing there. I've no real plans of new merch at the moment. Well, I was talking to the merch guys about some prints, some art prints. I've never really done posters and prints, and they've got an artist that they've been working with, and I looked at some of his stuff and it was cool, and I'm open to it, but it's not confirmed. But yeah. Shelley McLaren, Space or Dinosaurs, from Brody, age 4. The dinosaurs, I reckon. I like dinosaurs a lot. I don't know why there's not been a dinosaurs in space vibe or anything in films and that. I know there has in old, there's some old drawings and stuff, but yeah. I've not got a good answer to that. Emily Vass, are you still a member on Suicide Girls? We used to chat on there many moons ago. Now, this is an interesting one because people might think, oh, that sounds salacious. And it kind of is. It is a website for naked people, but I don't think there's anything salacious about that. I was on Suicide Girls before, I think, just as MySpace was coming up. And Suicide Girls was originally, it was kind of a social media platform, and as Emily Vass mentions there, I used to talk to a lot of people on there. There was groups and forums, and I used to really enjoy it. I'd do blogs all the time on there, and the community was genuinely good. Now, make no mistake, it was also really good to get to look at naked people, because that's a lot of fun. But genuinely, it was a lot more community based, and the time I kind of walked away from it was when Twitter and Instagram and all those kind of blew up and took the place of that community element. So that's kind of why I drifted away from there. But I looked on there recently and looked at, like, my profile is, honestly, I joined something like 12, 14, 15 years ago, a long time ago, before it was a big thing. And I looked, and like the last interactions on there were like 10 years ago or something. But yeah, it's still cool. I don't know how it is now. I don't know if there's a community there anymore or if there's blogs or chats or what. But yeah, it was cool. It was cool in the day. Stephen Wagstaff, I saw you years ago in Cork Island. You were amazing. Thank you very much. Have you thought about doing a live show podcast and getting the crowd involved? That's exactly what my live podcasts are. I've done a load of live distraction pieces. I've not done one in a few years, because, again, of a realisation that I've not got a huge desire to be in front of crowds. But I do adore the live podcast, because for those who don't know, you can go back into the back catalogue, including one in Dublin. The crowd is the guest. So rather than just putting a mic into the crowd, I set up on stage, I have chairs and mics. And I encourage anyone who wants to form an orderly queue at the side of the stage, and they take it in turns to come up and we have a chat. And it can be you asking a question like this, or it can be you saying, look, I work as a nurse and the NHS is under a lot of pressure at the moment. What are your thoughts on blah, 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 you know? And we have these chats and discussions, and yeah, it's good. Madalena Dragon, what are you most scared of in life? Darren Brown. Maze Angela, do you wash your beard? If so, what do you use? I use shampoo. It's hair. It's just weird that you'd think anything else. Connor Swagler, I answered this in the comment, but I thought I'd give a quick answer here. Explain the unexplained. Giacomo Brown, how did he come to be on the label? Is it true he doesn't make money off of his art and works at a library for fun? Really anything about him, he's a mysterious dude, and that's pretty fucking cool. Yeah, completely. So Giacomo Brown was the first artist I released on my label. He had no desire to make a living from being a musician. Me and Dan Lesak, in fact, had just heard a lot of his stuff and loved it. He played live twice, didn't see the appeal, so stopped doing that. And the reason I wanted to put the album out was, it wouldn't have got out any other way. Because if you've got an artist who's got this amazing record but isn't particularly interested in doing press, isn't particularly interested in playing live, and isn't interested in making money from it. Again, he's refused to make a penny from his record, and also isn't interested in making any more records. But yeah, I was like, well, it's amazing stuff. And as you'll hear from people like Connor and Sage Francis is a big fan, people adore his shit, so it felt good to get it out there. He did work in a library, not for fun, because you need a job to live is the reason. He's only ever wanted to work jobs that he doesn't earn enough to pay tax, because he doesn't support our current political system and governmental system, not party specific, but just in general, the way everything is set up, our societal system is not something he believes in and supports, therefore he would rather live below that. That's the story of Giacomo Brown. He's done that. He's turned down jobs. He's had part-time jobs that they've said, oh, we're going to make you full-time, and he's had to leave because full-time would push him into a taxable amount, and he's ethically against that. So yeah, that's the story there. I put more answers in the comments because a few people had some theories and things like that. I put more answers in the comments, so you can go and have a look at that if you wish. Ian Howard, has the stutter improved, or is it the case that the more I listen to the podcast, the less I notice it? I don't know, man. I don't listen to my podcast. And I don't particularly, you know, pay attention to my stutter. It's always been, at points it can be 100% under control, and at points it cannot. There's a question I'll talk about that later, which I really liked, because I don't think I've talked about it. But yeah, I think, I don't know, the more nervous I am sometimes. No, it's not a nervous thing. That's kind of a myth. It can be different for different individuals. Or listen to the episode with the stammer. There was a Stammer Awareness Day, and it was an episode I put out towards the end of last year, and it's one of the best episodes I've ever done. STAMMA is the charity. So if you search Stammer Special or Distraction Pieces Stammer or something like that, then you'll find it. And yeah, it's a really important one. It's the most overwhelmed I've ever been by the reaction to a podcast. I'm always overwhelmed by the more meaningful episodes, but this was obviously one that was hugely meaningful to me. And mean of the stories of the guests I had on meant a lot to me because of a connection I had to it. So the level at which you connected to their stories meant all the more to me than, you know, it normally does, which it normally means a lot, obviously. Adam Vallely, what are your best tips for a podcaster who's trying to push it to the wider audience outside of their sphere? Easy answer of Pod Bible here. Hit up the guys at Pod Bible. I'm one of those guys, but hit us up. I do a magazine called Pod Bible with Adam Richardson and Stuart Whiffin, and we started it just over a year ago, and it's been insanely successful, which is wonderful. And the whole point is to promote podcasts. It's to cover podcasts that people might not have heard of. You can take out adverts in it, but also, you know, if it's something that we enjoy, it will get covered. So yeah, I'd look at Pod Bible, and I'd look at the different events that are going on. In this new year, we're launching. So as this comes out, the first episode of the year will have come out, or the first issue. It's a magazine. It's a magazine that's a physical magazine that will, 40,000 copies will be going out with the Sunday Times, and it's also digital, but we'll also be doing a launch event for everyone. So you will have just missed this one if you're not already following, but there'll be a launch event the Monday of each one coming out, and it'll either be at King's Place, or it'll be at Acast, or it'll be at Spotify, and we'll normally do a live podcast record. The Pod Bible podcast is also out. It's out every Monday. It's 20 minutes long. It's really easy to just digest. But the point of these live events is we're going to record a live podcast, but they're also a networking thing. We want as many podcasters and podcast fans all in the room together, but with the people from Acast and the people from Spotify, because podcasting is such a solo or alone medium. You know, you can record it at home and then you send it out into the world, and there's no real interaction with the other podcasters and your peers. So that's kind of the point of these Pod Bible launch events. So yeah, come along to them. James McLaughlin, will we see you in any upcoming show/TV series? Yes, you will. I did a thing end of last year, a BBC sitcom that's coming out. I had a good few days on set for that, and it was a dream job. And then I started the year with another dream job of a film. Again, handful of days on set, but man, the people I got to work with and learn from, it's genuinely mind-blowing. So I can't say too much about it, but yes, there's plenty to come. This is what I do now. I've mentioned before, I get annoyed when people are like, oh, I saw your cameo, and it's like, no, I'm on smaller roles a lot of the time at the moment because I'm new, but this is what I plan to do for the next 30 years. So yeah, plenty more TV shows and films, hopefully. Oh, I also did, there's one that I can mention. I did a thing last year. It was only a day. So it's one tiny, tiny little scene, but it's not announced yet. It's on a Netflix show called Letter for the King, to the King, from the King. There's a letter and a king. And that was cool to be involved. I won't go into the reasons because it's a long, boring story, but it meant the world, even though it's a small part. There are no small roles, there are only small actors, etc, etc. Yeah, so I was buzzing to do that, and there will be more, and there will be hopefully growing in size and challenge. Costa Gravaris, what's the greatest thing you want to achieve this year in 2020? Not necessarily in film or podcast, but something that you were dying to complete by this year. I can't remove the film part of that. The things I want to achieve this year are all in film and TV. I've got a few projects that I'm on the verge of being confirmed on or getting or booking. And if I get any of them, it will blow my mind. So that's just hugely exciting to me. There's also probably two different scripts at the moment that are at the forefront that I really want to get finished. I've got two scripts in development, actively in development, a short that, again, to get to do the short, if I could say who's involved in that, you know, you'd know why I'm so excited about it. So yeah, it's all film and TV based stuff that I'm writing myself and stuff that I'm just absolutely honoured to even be considered to be in the mix for. So yeah, that's they're the things I want to achieve in 2020, in 2021, in 2022, in 2023, in 2024, in 2025, in 2026, in 2027, in 2028, in 2029, in 2030. I'm probably going to take 2031 off because that's the year of my 50th. But in 2032, in 2033, I'd love to really achieve a lot there. 2034, 2035, 2036. Jennifer Lake, do you jog on the spot when you have a cold shower, or do you just stand there under the cold water like an absolute weirdo? I don't jog on the spot. No, a lot of people know I love cold showers. There, me and Tim Clare talked about it a lot. Obviously, I had Wim Hof on, and he's the master of this. I started having cold showers a little bit, or after hearing about Wim Hof, a little bit before I had him on the podcast. So I've been having them for a good few years now. I tend to have them after a workout. I'll do a good workout and then I'll go and have a cold shower. Initially, when I'd get in there, I'd be tense or I'd be trying to think of a song in my head to distract me. But now the point is that you're reveling in it. The point is that you get to a point where you're not running on the spot and it's not a punishment. It's what you're excited for. So I get in there. I take some deep breaths. I don't actually do the Wim Hof breathing a technique because I can't remember it, but I should do. But I do control my breathing and I do get that under control, and I step in and I allow the cold water to run over me and I allow it to just wake up my whole body and make every part of me feel alive and excited. Tim Clare said when on speaking of cold showers, he can't say that cold showers are going to solve everything, but he's never felt worse after one. And it's true. Just mentally, it's so good for me. Physically, I believe it's really good for me. Yeah, I adore them. But no, I'm not jogging on the spot, because the whole point is that it's meant to be a... You're meant to be taking control of it. It's great if you're jogging on the spot at the start, but you should be aiming to get that control. It shouldn't be a punishment. If it's a punishment, then just stop. You don't need to be punishing yourself, man. I'm sure you're a good person, Jennifer Lake. But yeah, the point is that it should be a calm and controlled thing. And yeah, I love it. Vanessa Ellis. Now, I think Vanessa asked a few questions, and I've liked a lot of them. I deleted a few, but I liked a lot of them. We know you never shy away from new challenges, but when was the last time you felt totally out of your comfort zone? How did you end up there, and how did it turn out? Again, I feel like this is just a podcast of me banging on about being an actor. Isn't every podcast? But yeah, it's that. I feel completely out of my comfort zone, and I feel terrified at times. Last year, I had a period where I didn't book many roles, but I had some really good auditions, and I was enjoying that, and I felt I was developing hugely as an actor without even stepping on set, which was exciting to me, but I didn't want to rest on my laurels. So I've been lucky enough to become friends with Mr. Tom Hardy, who's taken me under his wing somewhat after we worked together on Taboo. He seemed to see, him and Stevie Graham seemed to see something in me, and yeah, have been just absolute legends and mentors to me. And I spoke to Tom about it. I said, look, I'm reading a lot of books on acting. I feel I'm developing loads, but I don't want to go stagnant. I don't want to, you know, the industry, again, Stevie has been one of the best for this, of him revealing that after he did This Is England, he didn't book another gig for over a year. So I know that that's part of the industry. But at such an early stage, I was like, well, I don't want to miss anything. I don't want to go stagnant. So yeah, I spoke to Tom, and he recommended a guy who used to teach him. So I went along to his classes, and the first class, it was terrifying, because it was beginners and intermediate, and the theory of it all is wonderful, but it's a lot. If you've not come from an acting, a drama school background, it's a lot. But I loved it. I really liked it. But that first class, in the first half, my thought was, when we go to the break, I might not come back after the break. I'm so out of my depth. I can't do this. This is terrifying. But then it went on, and it, you know, I got a little bit more relaxed, and then the second half started, and I was sitting there saying to myself, because you've got an option in these classes to get up and do something, and then he'll give you feedback and then tell you how you can apply it, the mechanisms he's teaching and stuff like that. And I kind of said to myself, look, if I don't get up and do something, I know I'm not going to come back next week. I know I'm going to bottle it. It's too much. I'll overthink it. And I'll find reasons to not come back. So I got up and did a piece. It's a thing that I'd been writing and working on at home. And I did it. And he, as he does after all of these, he says, okay, and how do you feel now you've performed that in front of the class? Kind of, how do you feel that? When is there anything you have learned from doing it here versus doing it at home? And I said, honestly, I said, I felt how it went. I felt I was shitting myself, and focused 100% on not letting everyone here know that I was shitting myself. And then we discussed that. I won't go into tons of detail. We discussed, you know, what the benefit of that was, how that added to it, how it subtracted from it. And yeah, it was cool. And then I went back every week for that. That was a 6-week course, I believe. And then I wanted to start that course again, but he suggested, he wanted me to move up to the intermediate advanced course. And I did that. I did that for 6 weeks. Didn't miss a single. I was the only person on both of those courses who didn't miss a single week. Because I'm a nerd for this shit, man. Everyone's busy, but I made it a priority. I would get home from, because it was in North London, I'd get home from these things at around midnight. And I had one that we had a Pod Bible launch the next day. So I had to be up at 5 a.m. to be in London at 6 a.m. to hand out Pod Bibles. That would have been a good reason to skip that class, but nah, I'll skip the sleep bit, thanks. So yeah, that was really scary, really out of my comfort zone. And that's kind of the case on every acting gig I've had so far. I feel really intimidated, and then I tend to get there and it tends to work out, and I tend to have prepared enough, and yeah, it's fucking cool, man. Where are we? We're at 40 minutes and I've answered about fucking 3 questions. Michelle Woodward, people always want to know something. I want to ask you how you are. What do you do to take care of yourself? January is a gloomy month. What could we could all do with a bit of self-care? I'm good, thank you, Michelle. And as said, it's been an amazing month. As you know, I can't talk about it in detail, but I got to start the year with only a few days on set, so that's going to translate to a few seconds on screen. But I had some dialogue, and it was on a project that it's mind-blowing to me that I get to be involved in. And I got to be on set, and typically, as I bang on about all the time, I kind of got to hang around and watch the other people work. And this, two of the actors I was watching a lot are two actors that I've adored for many, many years and had never met before. So yeah, it's just a dream. And then when I finished that, I literally wrapped on a Monday, and I was like, cool, I've got a short film that I might be doing. I've got some writing I want to do. I've got a few potential irons in the fire. And then I got an email asking me in for a casting for literally another film that I would kill to be involved in. And again, I might not get that, but it's just meant that January has been just me feeling really overwhelmed and grateful and positive. As said, as I mentioned, I did have this year, or over a year, it might have been stretching towards 2 years, of not really feeling I was smashing auditions and feeling I was improving so much as an artist. But as an artist, I sound like a cunt. As an actor, as whatever, but not getting the gigs. So to end the year on a BBC sitcom, working with someone that I absolutely adore, and working on a script that I think is mind-blowing, hilarious but also powerful and wonderful, and the character I got to play in that cracked me up. So ending the year on that, and then starting the year on this, and then, you know, even getting to go in for a casting on this other one that, again, it's a director that literally I've watched everything he's done and adored it, and yeah, it's pretty fucking cool. But thank you, Michelle. And also, I have taken time. I mentioned on the drunk cast, I forced myself to play FIFA. And that sounds really odd, but FIFA is something that I have to focus on. And I put a podcast on. And if I'm playing a computer game, I can't be looking at my phone or being drawn into work or being drawn into social media or whatever else. So it's something I feel sometimes with film and TV, I can get distracted. Or cinema's another one. I kind of pass it off as work because of the Films of the Year podcast, but it's somewhere I know that I will go and have my phone completely off and have a few hours just taking in something that I think is wonderful. So there are a couple of ways that I look after myself. Also, the cold showers and the exercise, I really enjoy both. And they're good for my brain as well as my body. Benjamin Quasar Everest, I know you have no plans to write new music, but do you have any desire to do anything on stage again, such as your Edinburgh Fringe sets, spoken word? Big fan of all you've done thus far, sir. Thank you very much, Benjamin. I kind of answered this. No real desires to step on stage. There's another question somewhere that relates to that. The answer is kind of the same, but yeah, I'll get to that one when I get to it. Connie B, her comment says, You said you liked this question before, but Facebook fucked us over, so I'll save the Christmas scene ones for another time. But what are you proudest of personally and or professionally in 2019, and what are you most excited for personally or professionally in 2020? Thank you, Connie. Yeah, I was going to answer this on the drunk cast, and it vanished. Again, it's boring, but I've just talked about it. As I said, ending the year on a sitcom that
involved some actors and writers and performers that I adore, and starting the year on this film, it's hugely exciting. And yeah, as for the year ahead, excited for any potential roles. The things I've got kind of in my head that I'd like to get, it would mean I'm working constantly and going from gig to gig to gig. So they won't all come through, but the excitement that they're not just pipe dreams, the excitement that all the ones I'm currently thinking of that would mean I'm working every month, essentially, are all ones that there's some kind of conversation going on, you know? And again, I know how this industry works, and I know that half of them aren't going to happen, more than half aren't going to happen, but it's pretty cool to be in the mix there. Ian Walker, having turned your hand to music, acting, photography and podcasting, is there another medium you fancy trying your hand at? It's script writing. Yeah, I'll keep that brief because I feel like I've just spent a whole hour just talking about acting and stuff like that. I haven't, because I talked about the Dan stuff and all this other stuff, but still, script writing. I'm writing loads of scripts and I love it and I feel they're improving. Joey Burrows, we've had no Whimpers and no Nimbus. I feel this is a trilogy in the making. Please tell me I'm right. Only reason I left this in there, I said I've still no plans to make music, but both No Nimbus and No Whimpers came unexpectedly. So they came at times when I had no plans to write music at that moment. They came in between records. They were songs that it was... The first one, No Nimbus, it was an experiment. I was in a low place. And the challenge I kind of set myself, I heard a song and I started to think of lyrics to go over the top. It was a Grimes song. And I wrote them that day and I recorded them the next day. And then I hit up my mate Tom and said, let's do a music video. And he wasn't available, but another Tom was. So basically, I heard a song, wrote, recorded, planned a video, shot a video, edited a video and had it all online within a week. And it meant the world because I was in a low place where I didn't feel, or I feel I'd had my self-worth somewhat stripped, and it was a nice reminder that I'm all right at stuff. You know what I mean? I ain't shit. To go, right, here we go. Here's something that didn't exist in any form a week ago, and now it exists and it's out there and it's got a video that's thought out. And yeah. And the same was with No Whimpers. That was all within a week. And that had, like, choreography in. The amazing people at I Am Epic, which is a talent group agency, helped me out there with some amazing people. So, yeah, that was pretty fucking cool. Matthew Moore, you've occasionally talked about our broken political system. If you could start from scratch, how would you organise our democracy? Assuming you'd stick with democracy. Stick with is an interesting term. what kind of fucking democracy is this? I think there's tons of options. I don't think democracy is the only option. The example my brother used to give is on Wikipedia alone, there's something like 32 different kinds of ocracy, and then there's many different kinds of democracy. Is it Greek democracy, I believe, was where it's kind of like jury duty, so everyone has, you get called up, you know, to have 6 months. No, Greek democracy was everyone has a say and it's all a vote. But there's democracies, I can't think, again, it's not something I look into loads. I'm no political expert, which is why I don't really have politicians on the podcast or anything like that, because I think we need more experts rather than more opinions. So yeah, there's a form of democracy. I think it's Greek. I think me and Russell talked about this on the first ever podcast, but there's a version of democracy where it's kind of like jury duty, and that sounds silly, but it eliminates any chance of corruption, because you're not there long enough to be corrupted, if you know what I mean. And it means that we would get a broad thing, because people in control, you know, it wouldn't work if the people who get in change everything immediately and then someone else is in next year and they change everything immediately. It's what we have now with the two-party system, essentially, is one party spends their time in charge trying to undo everything the other party did, and then at some point the other party get back and they spend their time trying to undo what the other party did, and it's just a stupid cycle. Yeah, I don't like our political system. I don't think we've got a true democracy. The voting system is weighted and ridiculous. The fact that it's essentially a two-party system is ridiculous, that we have to choose either Labour or Tories and no one else really has a shout. Yeah, I think it's a mess. I'm not saying I've got the answer, but I'm saying it's weird that we only... that all we think of is democracy is the only option. It's like a lot of people will be listening now going, well, democracy's the good one, right? It's like, well, what are the other versions throughout history? And we generally don't... I don't know all of them. I don't know most of them, but it's weird that we've just bought into that thing. Anyway, fucking politics. Scott Jameson. What time are we at? We're at 50 minutes. Not bad, not bad. Scott Jameson, I have a question for you I've had for ages, and I'd love to get an answer. Distraction Pieces, not the podcast or the podcast network or the book, but the album. Why, how did you come to the idea of a cover? I love both versions as they are both so different. The original feels like a young woman discovering her own sexuality, whereas yours sounds like a dirty one-night stand. Like I said, both great, pretty ballsy artists to cover too. I had a cover on Distraction Pieces of Feel It by Kate Bush. I don't feel, again, it's interesting because I don't feel it's a dirty one-night stand in our version. I had a singer called Natasha Fox, who's one of the best singers and humans I've ever had the pleasure to spend time with. She's wonderful. And yeah, it's, for reasons I won't go into, I've had to listen to Distraction Pieces a few times recently. In fact, fuck it, let's go into it. A less announced, I'm doing a repress of the vinyl, a limited edition. Think it's going to be transparent, glow-in-the-dark vinyl. Haven't announced this. Just decided it's announced. It's coming out at some point this year. But because of that, I've had to have it remastered for vinyl again, and I wanted to listen over it. I've had to listen to test presses. So you get 6 test presses, so you have to listen to all of them to make sure they all play nicely, and then it goes into mass production. So I had to listen to it 6 times in a row as a record, and I don't listen to my own music. So therefore, for example, there's songs on that record that I've not listened to since 2011 when it came out, because there's songs that I didn't play live. Now, if I played them live, then I would have obviously heard them. I've not listened to them, but I would have heard them on stage, you know, for a year or two after that. A version of Introduction even made it into mine and Dan's last tours. So, you know, but, you know, I've not listened to any of it because I don't. And Feel It was... the thing for me, the big standouts were Let 'Em Come, Soulja Boy and Feel It. And the reason for that is they're the ones that have got artists on who I'm just a massive fan of. It was kind of mad to go, oh shit, these artists, Sage Francis, B. Dolan, POS and Natasha Fox, are artists that I'm probably in, I've got to be in the running for biggest fan. You know, they all happen to be people that I'm now lucky enough to call friends, and some of them I've released their music on my label and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, I'm a huge fan, and there's certain songs of all of them that I adore. Yet there's this little area of their back catalogue that I never really listen to because it's on my record, because I'm on it and I don't like listening to my own stuff. So they were the highlights of going, oh man, POS's verse is so good. Bad times coming, bash up a castle. I know the zookeeper line them up, lines on them. All of that. And then, yeah, the real highlight was at the end, because I kind of forget that we did Feel It. And I'm a huge Kate Bush fan. So the fact that it's a Kate Bush song, and then the fact it's got an artist like Natasha Fox, who I just think is amazing, that was cool to listen to. And yeah, I don't see it as a dirty one-night stand song. Number one, I don't think there's anything wrong with one-night stands. And Andrew, what's his name? Andrew Day? Andrew Scott. The sexy priest in Fleabag and the baddie in Sherlock. He discussed this on How to Fail with Elizabeth Day. That people who are grown-ups are allowed to do what they want and there shouldn't be this shaming. And he spoke about how he's had one-night stands or casual sex or whatever you may want to call it that's been hugely important in his life. You know, it's meant a lot. Just because it's a temporary thing doesn't mean that there's not a huge moment there, or, you know, there could be a life-changing feeling or experience in that that happens to not turn into a long-term relationship. And that's really easy, because it's really hard for things to turn into a long-term relationship. So, yeah, I really liked his conversation there about that, how we need to reframe what we see as, or what we talk about respectfully and what we talk about dismissively. Because I believe as grown-ups, people can do what they want. If a young lady or a young man wants to be single for their whole life, I was going to say for a period of their life, but for their whole life, for however long they want in their life, then they're allowed to. And if they want to have sex with people during that period, as long as everyone is in on what the situation is and what the parameters are, there should be no shame in that whatsoever. And some of you will be listening now thinking, yeah, but you should really get into a relationship and settle down. No, you should. That's fine that that's right for you. And it might be right for me, and it might be right for other people, but it doesn't have to be right for everyone, and there shouldn't be shame in these things. So, yeah, I see that. Again, I perform all my songs as fictional narratives. So in that fictional narrative, I see it as a beautiful sexual love song, you know, a real intimate moment. And I don't know if that moment was one night, the beginning of a long-term thing, the middle point in a long-term thing, the return to a long-term thing after a break. You know, I don't know what that is, but I certainly see it as, yeah, a visceral an emotional connection of two fictional characters. But yeah, also Kate Bush is a shit. Holly Quick said, who would you want to play you, Stu and Chris in a film about your life? If there was a film about my life, I would not want Stu and Chris to make the cut. LJ Thompson, who would you like to play you in a film about you? I would like me to play me in a film about me. And I would like to write it. No, I wouldn't. That'd be so boring. I've no desire to have a film. I have people ask every now and then if I had a publisher ask if I'd like to write a biography. It's like, no, I couldn't think of anything I'd want to spend my time on less than going over the stuff I've done. Says the man who's an hour into a podcast where he's talking about his answers to questions on his own. In his empty house. Mark Hurdle, is Richard Whiteley Unbriefed the greatest TV show ever made? I liked this one because I don't know if I've mentioned it, because it was weird that this came up, but this must have come up because I mentioned it on the podcast, right? But I went to a live recording of Richard Whiteley Unbriefed, and I looked at Mark, I was like, I don't think I know Mark. I do know a Mark Hurdle, but that's not the Mark Hurdle I know, I don't think, but I can't really see because it's an artist Facebook page. There's reasons it's boring. But Richard Whiteley did a talk show where they don't tell him who the guests are, and the guests just come out, and he has to ask them questions and kind of interview them and try and figure out who they are. And the one that I went to, I can't remember who else was on, but I remember Shovel from M People was on, the drummer on M People, and yeah, that was it. That happened. That was a thing that happened. It's just weird. I saw that. I was like, have I mentioned that? Because that's a really weird one to pick out. But I wonder if it's someone I went with or that I know. I don't think so. But yeah. Anyway. Allard Van Der Meer, what's your favourite activity that you've never participated in? It'll be wrestling or MMA. I adore them. I watch them constantly. I've never participated in them. I've not got a great desire to. I'd maybe be interested in doing something in wrestling. I don't know what. But yeah, there we go. Travis Kenny, did you ever have Neil Harris lined up for the podcast? I did a few times, and I might, he's going to be busy with Cardiff now. But yeah, I had it lined up a few times, and we couldn't get the timing right. Ben Sullivan, where do you get your crazy ideas from? I get them from Rahul Estepa. Ben Chapman, would you ever consider doing a round table with your entire family and discussing your own childhoods with your brother and parents? I had both my parents on. My brother thinks podcasts are shit and, on a larger extent, arguably quite damaging. he's right on a lot of it. He feels they are a big factor in the popularization of opinion over expert opinion. People will talk for hours on a subject they have very little knowledge on. I'm a big fan of Joe Rogan, but Joe Rogan can be one of the most damaging on that. That they'll get into a big discussion on something that they've not properly researched. And because he has tens of millions of listeners, they will then think, take it as gospel and take it as... And because Joe is very intelligent, but he doesn't know everything. No one does. They're only human. But yeah, I think that's a big thing, the damage of podcasts. So yeah, my brother will... I know a lot of people ask, and I floated it a few times, but yeah, since we've discussed it a little more, it's clear he'd have no desire to ever come on any podcast. And I like that the conversations that we have don't exist for anyone else. They exist for us alone. Me and my brother watch most of the UFCs together. So we sit up from 10 p.m. prelims till about 6 a.m. when the main card ends. And the deep philosophical shit that we talk, that mainly he talks and educates me on, is beautiful. And I love that it only exists in my living room at such a ridiculous hour whilst watching men and women in their underwear punch each other. Daniel Judge, why the beard? No reason. Why the fingernails? Why the hair? Is there a reason for your haircut? Or do you just have that haircut? Yeah, there's no big reason, man. It's just hair on my face. Andy Johnson, I'm pretty sure when it comes to auditioning for roles... Oh, this is the one I liked earlier. I'm pretty sure when it comes to auditioning for roles in movies and TV, it can be pretty cutthroat. Pretty much anyone who knows about you having a stutter. With this in mind, have you at any time suffered any difficulties, negativities, or even prejudices when it comes to the casting process for movies? And the answer to that is not that I know of. Because I thought the answer was no. I put in a lot of time preparing for all castings and auditions. I feel there's many areas I may be lacking as I'm new to this, but one area I can make sure I cover is prep and dedication and drive and passion. So I really prep. And if I prep something, I'm pretty good at working round any stutters or stammers, I think. The reason I say I think is there's also, like, I discussed this on, I think it was on, I did a King's Speech episode, not this Christmas, the Christmas before, and it was just as I'd first started working with stammer, and it all of a sudden my stutter was at the forefront of my mind, and I started to get crazy paranoid that I was like, hang on, so I've just had this period where I've not got a few acting gigs, have I stuttered in all the auditions and just not known? And I've gone in there thinking I've smashed it, and then I've left, and they've gone, fucking hell, how can we cast that guy? He can't speak. But yeah, as far as I know, I get it under control. And me and Joe Gilgan talked about this, because, yeah, it is a big thing to me that I worry that people might, because I'm so open about my stammer and stutter, there might be people who are in positions of power who, not through prejudice, just through logical thinking, think, yeah, we can't really, there's a lot of talking in this role, that's going to be a struggle for him. It's not. I feel I can deliver on all these things, and when I've been called to, I feel I have. So yeah, I've certainly had auditions that have been incredibly wordy. As you know, I do a podcast, and before I did the podcast, I had years of being a spoken word artist and rapper, incredibly wordy stuff, and pretty much none of you knew I had a stutter. It was only when I started doing the radio show and the podcast that people were like, has this dude got a stutter? So yeah, it's stuff that I can put the time and effort in to get under control in those. And again, it's weird because I feel that once I'm in a character, the character doesn't have a stutter. The stammers are fucking fascinating, man. I don't understand it, but it's cool. Ashley Marie Ward, who is your favourite spoken word performer, and will you ever do any more in the future? I won't. I've no plans to anyway. We've discussed this a lot. I mean, Polar Bear, Kate Tempest, Rob Alton. Of active people, I guess Rob Alton. Kate is doing more music. Polar Bear is writing amazing novels. So of active people, Rob Alton. It's comedy slash spoken word, but he's just a legend. Shane Hall, now you're acting, does it ruin the magic of how they do things as a viewer? It doesn't, it doesn't. I use the example of Monos. That was probably my film of the year this year. Out on Blu-ray and DVD soon, actually. So get that. But I remember I watched that in the cinema and there was excitement and joy of what I watched. And then there was a second wave of excitement and joy of how the fuck did they manage to make that and get those performances in those conditions. And yeah, but it is, there is an element of that. I'm pretty good at switching it off, but there is an element of that. Once you've existed a bit on set and behind the scenes, yeah, you're like, all right, this isn't a natural flowing thing as it looks, but yeah. Vanessa Ellis again. Did you ever play golf with Beef Johnson? If so, or crazy golf with Beef? If so, who won? No, we never got around to organising that. We need to chase that. Matt Penny, beards, fad question mark. No idea. I had a beard before they were popular. I've still got one now. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't keep too up on trends. But, again, I'm sure they're a fad. I'm sure everything's a fad, right? Every haircut. Yeah, I don't know. I'm skimming a bit now because I don't think I've got enough. Or I don't want to do a two-parter. But I reckon I can. I am over an hour, so I don't want to go too crazy. JNRLTTL, is that a name? If you weren't a pop star, what would you be? Number one, thank you so much for even thinking to refer to me as a pop star. I don't think I've ever had particularly pop. I've been in the charts. What would you be? The answer to that is an actor, because I stopped doing music 6 years ago to focus on acting and podcasting. Is what I'd be, a podcaster, an actor, and writer. What is your favourite colour? Probably black. Do you like Eminem? I've not enjoyed him in a while, and anytime I do enjoy him, anytime I think, oh, is he coming back to being great again, he drops like the word faggot or something in there, and you just think, oh no, he's just incredibly lazy in that manner. So yeah, but I'm not having to go. He's doing what he's doing. I don't listen to tons of music anymore, man. So you know, is what it is. And Michelle Boyd, if you had to choose between Pizza Hut or Domino's for the rest of your life, who would it be? Probably kill myself. Joseph Frank Mears, favorite overall WWE pay-per-view. It's always the Royal Rumble. I mark this one because I'm recording this the day after this year's Royal Rumble, and it was wonderful. I loved it. I love Royal Rumbles because I love wrestling and I love counting down from 10 to 1. So, yeah. And I thought both the men's and the women's one this year were superb, beautifully written, beautifully played out, beautifully executed. Loved it. Guy McDowell, are there any techniques or tricks you have to help with your creative output, e.g. brainstorming, visualising yourself being creative and productive before you begin work on a project, using a Pomodoro timer, I don't know what that is, any little tricks that you think have helped your creative workflow? Not massively, but I do find having a few things on the go at once normally helps, because I feel there's nothing that helps me complete something more than having another project that I don't want to start work, that I don't want to work on, so I'll be working on this one. Allowing, it's a balance of discipline, and I always thought it was just about discipline, sit down and write this and that. I think it's a balance of discipline and respecting the importance of leisure, respecting the importance of letting ideas bubble. When I get insomnia a fair bit, and the insomnia I like is the creative insomnia, when there's an idea in my head that I can't stop thinking through. So I'll get a lot of my planning and prep for a day's writing the night before, and that's fine. Again, if you don't get stressed over it, that's fine. I'll lay there thinking over all of it, and then the next day I'll have to get it out on paper so that I can sleep the next night. So yeah, but yeah, I've not got any great clues or tips. I think at times, taking the pressure off, the first script I properly wrote that got optioned by Warp and got a lot of hype and excitement. I went away to Sheffield to write before there was any talk of Warp being involved. That's just where I happened to be setting it. I went away there to write, and I had 3 days there, and I got fuck all written, but I walked around a lot, and I thought a lot. And then I came home, and the next week, probably in the first half of that week, I wrote the whole script. And if I'd got stressed out about the fact I'd paid for 3 nights in a hotel on my own, hadn't told anyone I was there, I wasn't socialising, I wasn't hanging out with people, I paid for this and the point was to write and I didn't get my writing done or I didn't get enough done. If I'd beaten myself up over that, then it might have killed the project. But the fact that I was like, all right, well, there you go. And then I came back and, yeah, it all flowed. Angelina Lineker, in the podcast last year, I think maybe with Danny Boyle, you mentioned Ed Sheeran had a tough time on set in a previous film. I'm guessing it was The Bastard Executioner. Yes, it was a TV series. Can you talk about what happened? I can't remember what I said there. He didn't have a tough time, but it surprised him. It was harder than he was expecting. He's Ed Sheeran, so he's doing a million things. And because I know Ed from back in the day, the night he arrived, the night before his first day on set, he texted me at the hotel and was like, "You about? Let's have a drink." So I came down and met up with him, hang out. And then I know that he went on set and he struggled on the first few days because he's not had acting training, and neither have I. But because it was a bigger focus for me, I had had time to really make sure I'd learned my lines, make decisions on my character, make a lot of choices. And I think at that point, he was flying in from one country after doing MTV awards and doing this and that. He probably hadn't had the time to dedicate it that he would maybe have liked. And again, I'm not saying that as a laziness thing, just hadn't physically had the time he would have liked. So when he got on set, the dialogue wasn't always there. He didn't have it quite down. And the pressure's on because you're working with people who live for this, you know, who don't care who you are or where you're from. They live for this and they do this day in, day out, and have done for their whole lives. So I think the first few days, he struggled a bit in that respect, but then it kicked him up the arse, man, or it shook him up, and it meant that when he was in again, I think it was a couple of weeks later, he seemed on it, and he seemed like, you know, he'd found out what he needed to do, how he needed to prep, and yeah, that's it. So if it came across as a dig at Ed, it shouldn't have, but you know, these things happen in MMA, in podcasts. Ben Gumery, act, write, or direct? Yes. At the moment, I choose act and write over direct, but that's because I've not learned that yet. And I plan to learn everything in this industry, whether or not it's to use it. You know, I think the beauty of these things is learn. I did this with touring. I learned every element of touring to make me better at the one element I had to do, if you know what I mean. And I think that's the same in this. Toucan Steers Cowton, would you ever release a book of standalone poetry? Nope, I've never really written poetry. There's a massive difference between page poetry and stage poetry or performed poetry, and I respect that difference. I always wrote my stuff to be said out loud. The bulk of it I recorded, the rest of it I'm kind of happy with the idea that it only existed in those rooms at those times. So yeah, I did a graphic novel of poetry because I felt that was an interesting middle ground. So that's called Poetry in Emotion. We did two or three print runs, I think, and they all sold out. But it's, you know, it's probably around in places. But yeah, that was cool. Tom Comey, Code Gree. How do you stay grounded? I live in the same town I've always lived in. And I think that helps because it's not always the nicest of towns. As you will have heard if you heard the Films of the Year podcast and heard that I got broken into the night before New Year's Eve. And it wasn't nice, but you know, that isn't something that keeps me grounded. But I think having remained in the same place all this time helps. And just being really into creating rather than any of the other side of it. I don't know. I may have not have stayed grounded. I'm sure I've drifted up and down that gradient over the years. But yeah, speaking of which, Jonita, someone from my hometown that I've known since he was mates with my big brother, and they used to go scouts and venture scouts, and Johnnie was kind of, in my mind, one of my brother's cool mates. He'd generally wear a cap, a camo cap normally, I think. I love John, good lad. I ain't seen him in a while. If it's the same John Itter, I mean, it might not be. Yeah, actually, I'm looking at the trying to look at the picture again. I can't look at it big. It might not be, but I can't tell. Have you been watching Fat Tony and Co on Amazon? No, I haven't. So that was an anti-climax, wasn't it? Ewan Hall, is there a question you've gone into an interview wanting to ask, but for reason, some reason or another, it's not felt right to ask? Yeah, I left that one. I wanted to answer that one because that's something that happens all the time. And something that I've got better and better with is realizing at points your plan of what you wanted to ask or talk about isn't the priority. Like, I've had ones recently where it's flowing so beautifully and I've got this thing that I'm like, oh, I wanted to ask this. And it's like, just leave it. Even if I think I've got this well-written question, it's not about me. If we're flowing in a wonderful direction, it's better to keep flowing in that direction, or even to just wrap things up, you know, and go, right, that was a beautiful natural end, rather than go, well, there's one thing that I wanted to ask. So it happens all the time. And more of late, it's something that I kind of am conscious to try and revel in a way and make sure I'm not just forcing my questions in there. Let's see. Ross Andrew Gallagher, other than I Met You, have you explored amazing music of the Proclaimers any further? Yeah, loads. I love the Proclaimers. I bang them on about all the time. Sunshine on Leaf is the record for me, but I caught them live years ago and really enjoyed them. And yeah, I'm not an expert on them, but I'm a big fan of a lot of their tracks. And the film that I had him on the podcast, the Dexter Fletcher did a film called Sunshine on Leaf that is a musical based on their music, and that was bloody good too. Here we go. Ryan Francis, would you ever do live theatre? I've been asked about this recently and I've declined, but it is something that I'm more and more curious about. I've declined because you can only do so many things at once. And my focus at the moment is I want to get really good at acting on camera. I'm still really new to this, even though I'm 3-4 years in or whatever it is. I'm still learning and I'm still trying my best, and I want to dedicate myself to getting really good at that. But I believe live theatre would be a completely different experience. And another scary one, I do think it's something that at some point it would benefit me to do and to learn and to challenge myself with. But I'm not sure that now is the point for that. Yes. Mark Griffiths, if you could wake up tomorrow and be fluent in a language, which one would you choose? I'd probably choose French, because I've got a love-hate with France. Me and Dolan always moaned about France when we were touring, but there's certain parts of France that I adore, and yeah, I don't know. I'm not that fussed. I'd love a bit of Italian, a bit of Spanish, any of them. Luke Cotty Cotterill, when was the last time you had a Meadsy-based pizza? I've not had one since I worked in Pizza Hut. So that was when I was like 16 or 17. That's when I created the Meadsy base. That's when I consumed it. Yeah, it's a hell of a pizza. If you listen to my guest spot on Off Menu podcast, you'll hear all about the Meadsy base pizza. Ian Morris, are you going to shave your beard off? Are you ever going to shave your beard off? I pushed really hard to shave my beard off for this film I've just done. I thought it'd be good for the character. The director and producer felt the beard was a better look for the character. But yeah, I'd shave it off in a heartbeat. I'd love to have a role that warrants me losing the beard. Again, it's only hair. It'll grow back if I choose to grow it back. But yeah, as a little insight there, I really pushed hard on this recent one because the idea I had for the character was that having kind of a moustache and stubble would be a really good look for him. But they were a fan of the beard, and they're right. They know their shit. Lexi Tinks, next tattoo, what will it be? And will it be Mr. Heggie? I've no plans to get any at the moment. I've eased up on tattoos again. It's always coming back to acting because of a lot of stuff has to be covered up and stuff like that, and it can be restrictive. And yeah, it just hasn't been anything that I'm itching to get. So that's that. That's that. Christopher Robin Lamin, favourite board game. I'm not a big board gamer, but me and Chris likes to. Chris Glasson, he likes some Warhammer. He likes to play Warhammer. He came round and we played Blood Bowl a couple of times. I enjoyed that. So I like a bit of, I like those things. Part of the enjoyment is that Chris really cares and I don't, and I really enjoy that because he'll spend ages on his move. And I'll still be considered, but I don't care if I win or lose. I'm not a competitive person. And I know that secretly winds him up a little bit. Adam Donald, why were you recording with Wes Borland and why can't I hear it? Wes Borland, Danny Lonner and Travis Barker were working on some stuff like back in 2013 or something, man. And we posted a picture online and it never came about. It was thoughts of a solo record. And then again, going back to the thing earlier saying, I've got no desire to make music at the moment. It's not that I'm sitting on all this amazing music, but there's nothing I've particularly got to want to say or want to do in that realm. So yeah, we were bouncing about some ideas for a solo record for me because Travis played drums on Introduction and Danny Lonner produced Introduction and me and Wes are pals and we thought we might come up with something, but it was only a day or two in a studio just playing about and we never really got anywhere with it. I should wrap this up. Jordan Robinson, simple one from me, my friend. First of all, big up Jordan. Do you have any... I added that. That isn't what he wrote. Do you have any regrets about anything? Sure, tons of regrets. That's part of life. There's been castings I feel I should have gone a different way or... Yeah. But none that cripple me or play on my mind, really, I don't think. Eddie John Carter, have you had a guest lined up but it just never happened for one reason or another? Yeah, there's loads. The main one that killed me was Ray Liotta. I had him lined up last year and it fell apart the night before. So I'd prepped the podcast and everything and I was so excited. I'm like, I'm going tomorrow morning to sit down with Ray Liotta and it fell through last minute. But I've had loads fall through. I had Olivia Colman lined up, Emma Stone lined up, Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson tentatively lined up, but not fully. But the Ray Liotta one was literally like proper lined up, booked in. It's going to happen. Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, Scarlett Johansson, Adam Driver, and all of these were kind of the PR people had asked if I'd be interested. I'd said yes. We'd started to bounce some dates back and forth and then they just didn't happen. But the Ray Liotta one was the one that... And Chris, who was setting that one up, is a diamond. And I dig him out all the time for breaking my heart with that one. Because I bumped into him at a screening like 3 days before that was happening. And I was like, man, I can't wait. And he's like, yeah, it's going to be cool. It's going to be a great episode. And then it fell through at the last minute. Damn it. Peter Robertson, do you miss the music and the crowds? Answered that at the start, so that's a good one to end on. I don't. It's weird, man, but I really don't. I just don't. So, yeah, that's the end of the podcast. I've just had, this isn't part of the Q&A, but I just had a message through from someone called Sam Cox saying, by any chance, do you drive a Focused RS? A Focus RS, I don't. Is it just a massive coincidence that there's a car with the registration SC Pip driving around Essex? Someone sent me a picture of that, I think. And no, it's not mine, but that must be a massive coincidence. But yeah, who knows, mate? Who knows? Anyway, thank you for tuning in. This is the first Ask Pip episode I've done. Honestly, it's over a year. It might be 2 years. So thank you for all your lovely questions. I enjoyed that. I didn't cry on this one. I think the last one I did might be the one I cried on. But yeah, thank you. I will see you all soon. I need to go and rehearse some lines for a callback I've got tomorrow for the audition I was saying that I had last week that is like a dream role job type thing. And I've got a meeting tomorrow with the director and the head of casting. And I'm like, man, I want it so bad. But yeah, I'm going to go and work on that. And I'll see you all in a bit. Ta-ta!
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll keep it nice and brief at the end here. Have a blooming lovely time. And I'll see you all next week. Every week. I'm here every Wednesday. Every Wednesday for over 5 years now. Good God. See you in a bit. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.